Today on Straight Talk Africa, the significance of the continental institution, the African Union. The 31st AU summit wrapped up last week in Mauritania with advisory decisions on several pertinent issues. But critics say the Addis Ababa-based institution reminds them of a glorified think tank that talks the talk without walking the talk. 22 African presidents, 4 prime ministers, and 2 foreign ministers attended the 2-day meeting. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all of our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Hayley Adams-Fitzpatrick, and I'll be your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion on the significance of the continental institution, the African Union.
And coming up later, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails and Facebook comments. We'll reveal some of them ahead here on Straight Talk Africa.
The 31st African Union Summit wrapped up last week in Mauritania, where the leaders discussed important issues affecting the continent. My colleague Paul Ndiho has more.
Following the conclusion of the summit held in Mauritania, 49 of the 55 member states of the African Union, AU, have now signed the agreement establishing the African Continental Free Trade Area. A $2.3 trillion continental free trade zone encompassing 1.2 billion people would be the biggest in the world by member states, in a bid to increase intra-regional trade, which sits at a measly 15% of Africa's total commerce. Corruption was high on the agenda, in line with the 2018 theme, Winning the Fight Against Corruption, a sustainable path for Africa's transformation. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari, the chairman of the AU anti-corruption effort, who has made cleaner governance his pet issue, led the bloc in the fight against corruption and encouraged member states to combat illicit financial flows, strengthen their national anti-corruption agencies, and invest in the demographic dividend, among other measures. On peace and security in Africa, the summit reaffirmed its support for the imposition of punitive measures against obstructing efforts to achieve reconciliation and peace in South Sudan. It also welcomes efforts to normalize relations between Ethiopia and Eritrea. During the summit, the AU chairman, Rwandan President Paul Kagame, indicated France as an essential partner in the fight against terrorism in Africa. And he emphasized that it was that reason why the AU was pleased to welcome French President Emmanuel Macron at the summit, which was overshadowed by security failings in the Sahel. Analysts say that when it comes to the issue of peace and conflict resolution, the AU, whose mandate is non-indifference, has done reasonably well, in contrast with its predecessor, the Organization of African Unity, OAU. The OAU adhered to a doctrine of non-interference, a policy that was not helpful to protecting or serving the African people. Critics said that despite structural reforms undertaken by the African Union, a constitutional crisis remains a prevalent issue in many African countries. The AU has also come under criticism for failing to deal with African leaders who engage in the shifting of the constitutional goalposts in order to remove or circumvent term limits. For example, some incumbent presidents have exploited the law by undermining democracy so as to extend their presidential term limits. Analysts argue that perhaps, just like they have taken a stand against doing business with leaders who seize power through military coups, the same should apply to those leaders who change their constitutions to stay in power, much longer than their mandate. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Joining us here are supposed to be two guests. One of them is Ambassador Thomas Kwesi Kwate, the deputy chairperson of the African Union, which is based in the Ethiopian capital of Addis Ababa. But due to circumstances beyond our control, we do not know exactly where he is right now. And the Reverend Aniedi Okule, the Executive Director, African Faith and Justice Network, which is based right here in the nation's capital of Washington, D.C. Well, it's always a pleasure, of course, to host you on Straight Talk Africa, Reverend Okule.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for your graciousness and for the great work you do for VOA. I'm delighted to be here. I'm honored to be here.
You're most welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Later in the program, we'll give our audience a chance to call in with your question or comment. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. I honestly wish that Ambassador Kwate was here, because he would be really the one to answer the critical question whether or not the African Union is doing what it is expected to do. What about you? You've been an observer of the continental institution. What does it strike you like? What is the significance of the African Union, really?
You know, a union per se, the African Union per se, it's a wonderful body to have. It is there supposedly to bring the continent together, the various countries together, to promote in some of the 14-point reason for the AU, to promote unity, to promote economic cooperation, to promote security, to engage in the promotion and protection of human and people's rights, which the countries have adopted, and to promote sustainable development within the continent. As an observer, I don't see that happening. It hasn't happened in the way that one would expect a continent that size, 55 countries, great diversity of economic bloc, diversity of people, mineral resources, and very rich in so many ways. Why has it not happened? In my own assessment, I think that the players, the government, the leaders of the countries are still very much interested in their own personal gains to a large extent. Not everyone. Some are trying. But in general, there is an inner focus, my gains over the gains of first the country they represent and the continent to which they belong. That's what I see. The second thing is that when you look at the issue of sustainable development that they say they want to have, and economic cooperation, most African countries are quicker, faster to have agreements with countries outside of the continent than the countries next door.
You know, in a bilateral context.
Yeah, in a bilateral context, yes. You know, you have sometimes the governments tend to go back to the former colonial masters, the respective former colonial masters, to establish links with them rather than forge relationships with the people next door, which is something that truly, truly will enhance the welfare of the continent and the people living in that country.
Now, you know, of course, that there was another institution before the founding of the African Union. Mm-hmm. We should point out, by the way, that the African Union was actually founded in
2001.
It was founded in 2001,
yeah,
in Addis Ababa,
mm-hmm,
but it was launched in 2002. Was it in Durban?
Yep,
exactly. Okay, yes.
South Africa.
Okay, so, okay.
Its predecessor used to come under intensive criticism, the Organization of African Unity. Uh-huh. And I remember putting a question to the then Secretary General in 1993, Tanzanian Salim Ahmed Salim. I asked him whether, in fact, the OAU was really relevant in as far as the African people were concerned. And I recall him saying, you know what, Shaka? If the OAU was not there, Africa would probably have actually invented it. And he probably had a very good point, given the fact that the OAU was able to decolonize Africa from European powers.
Mm-hmm.
It was also able to end apartheid
mm-hmm.
in 1994, and mm-hmm. South Africa got the first indigenous African president. So it did seem to, in fact, have accomplished this mandate. The question is, to what extent, in fact, is really the African Union relevant right now, especially given that it has embraced a policy of non-indifference, which is very, very much or strikingly different from its predecessor
of non-interference,
mm-hmm. in internal affairs.
Yeah. Okay, let me take the question of non-indifference. You know, sometimes as I look at it, these policies are excellent on paper, you know. Fantastic. I mean, I agree with what you say. If there wasn't AU or OAU, Africans would have invented it. Yeah. Because there is need for it.
They are excellent on paper. You mean they do not have legs or
like? Yes, you know, it's like you have teeth, but you can't bite. You refuse to bite, not that you can't.
Then how do you survive?
Exactly, you refuse to bite. And that's the point, because African countries, they have all it takes. They have all it takes to forge their own destiny, you know. But every time running for outside to help, for help, running for outside for, you know, come and help us how to plant food. Come and help us for security. Come and help us for development. As if there are no people in that continent. One thing I want to say here, if you look at around the world, many Africans are excelling in different fields, from engineering to medicine to name it. Africans in this country, you know, last February during the Black History Month, you know, there was a TV program highlighting what Africans, African-born, not African-Americans, African-born who migrated here, what they have achieved on parallel to even...
You're talking about the African diaspora?
Yes, the African diaspora, yes.
You could even, in fact, relate to what is happening as we talk. We're talking about the beautiful game.
Yeah, exactly.
The World Cup.
Exactly.
As we talk, you do not have a single African country right now in the semi-finals.
Yes.
But you do have...
Africans. Exactly.
Represented.
Yeah, across
in
board.
In different countries.
Across board.
We're talking about France.
Yep.
We're talking about Belgium.
Absolutely.
Which was beaten yesterday.
Yep.
We're talking about England.
Absolutely.
And as a matter of fact, the French team, which won it all back in 1998, was virtually made up of African
That's
players.
The point. That is the point. I mean, in this country, as we speak, the first successful fetal surgery,
well,
you know, created by an African. So when you have people like that, and then our leaders continue looking outside for help.
We'll come to that later with the help of Ambassador Thomas Kwesi Kwate. Before pausing for a short break, we want to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now streaming live on Facebook. To watch our show, just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa and don't forget to share it with your friends. We are on Twitter and to follow us at VOA Shaka, that's VOA Shaka. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA African Union. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githi Ewart. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. We are delighted to mention that Ambassador Thomas Kwesi Kwate, the deputy chairperson of the African Union, which is based in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, is right here with us. I have to say frankly, Mr. Ambassador, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, sir, and thank you for having me. You know, I grew up as a kid listening to VOA and BBC, and on VOA I used to enjoy the Jazz Hour by Luis Canova.
Really?
It's a real pleasure and a privilege to be here.
Very interesting.
It's beyond all my wildest imagination. Thank you, sir. Very interesting.
And of course, you have had a very, very distinguished diplomatic career. The last time I checked, you've been to Havana. Does that mean you speak some Spanish?
Un poquito.
You've been to Cotonou, Benin, which means you probably speak French.
I learned French in Cotonou, actually. That was my first posting. And that remains a special place because I met my wife in Cotonou. I got married in Cotonou. My first child was born in Cotonou with has a Benin passport, a Benin carte de naissance. Yeah. So Cotonou, ma apporté beaucoup de bonheur.
Oh,
so,
very interesting. But of course, if it really wasn't for the Scramble for Africa, that meeting in Berlin, 1884, 85, and Chancellor Prince Bismarck. You probably wouldn't, in fact, have those artificial boundaries separating Ghana, Nigeria, and Benin. Those are your people. You are the same people.
You know, I'm glad you begin with this subject. You know, I used to be secretary to President Mahama.
That is correct.
And we went to Berlin for a visit. It was Africa, Germany, something. And we had an informal lunch with the president, Horst Schola. And he said something which stuck in my mind. He said that there's this Africa Hall 100 meters away where the meeting, the Berlin Conference,
the partition
Africa was held. And he suggested that we ought to go and have a look there because a lot of our history was there. So I began to take an interest in that. So I began to look for the proceedings. And I got a book. I didn't quite get the proceedings, but I got a book which tried to reflect the proceedings. There was a seminar.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating stuff. And I believe that Africans have got to take an interest, have got to formally seek the full record of those proceedings. Because in these proceedings, you begin to find out what went into deciding how Cote d'Ivoire became Cote d'Ivoire, how Ghana Gold Coast became the Gold Coast, how Congo Brazzaville became French and Congo Leopoldville became Belgian.
Mm-hmm.
The intrigue and negotiations, the interest that went into dividing up the continent. And then it begins to dawn on us that we were not eternally divided, that our division was man-made, and so man can restore the integrity of the continent again, which really is the raison d'etre of the African Union. All the African Union is seeking to do now is to disentangle the knots to which we were tied in Berlin 1884-85. So it's a very critical year for us. And I wish that African governments and African people could pay a little more interest to that, because it shows you where we come from.
Now talk to us sincerely.
Tells you where we can go to.
About that important institution, the African Union. What is its significance, really? I mean, it's been around for about almost two decades right now.
Yes.
Can you tell me, for example, and share at least what you think is the single most important accomplishment that it has done? Share that with our audience.
Let me tell you, first of all, that the African Union evolved out of the Organization of African Unity.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
That was a vehicle to bring liberation to the continent. Now, with the emergence of constitutional rule in South Africa, with Mandela working out of jail, that era, you could say, had been accomplished. But the reality of the partition and division of Africa remained. So the task of the African Union now, as it evolved from the OAU, is to complete the integration of the continent. The first one was for liberation. Now it's for us to try to bring, to put Humpty Dumpty together again.
When you talk about integration,
yes,
what exactly do you mean, at least to persons? In a manner that a lay person can understand. Are we talking about, again, removing those artificial boundaries that separate the Africans? What are we talking about, really?
First of all, if you allow me, if we talk about the need for unity, the need for integration, the need to come together, that by itself is a logical admission that somehow we are not quite so integral, that we have lost something of our integrity. Integrity means wholeness. So it behoves on us as Africans.
Integrity, character.
Yes. Mm. It behoves on us now as Africans to try and locate the source of the loss of that integrity. That is how the Berlin Conference comes in. Now, you lose the integrity, you're trying to regain it. To regain it for what? To regain it to improve the lives of your people through better governance, through more transparency, through more democracy, and all that. To make the African Union, African continent, a place where our African people, our young people, can go and in and out, can live happily, to be properly governed, that they don't feel compelled to walk across the Sahara, to try and cross the Mediterranean, get drowned. These harrowing sights, it's all because our continent, first of all, had not been properly governed, had been invaded, we have been enslaved, we have been colonized, we are in the process of restoring that integrity, we are in the process of managing our continent for our benefit. Our people were taken away to work outside for the wealth of other people. I come from Ghana, where you have the castles. Those slave castles are a monument to what must have taken place, to the slave trade. After the slave trade, the Europeans came and partitioned,
I am sure that you have read the classic work of the late...
Eric Williams?
No, Walter Rodney.
Fascinating stuff.
From Guyana.
High Europe and a developed Africa.
Precisely. In fact, I have also said how Africa developed Europe and North America.
That is the obverse of how Europe and a developed Africa. So Africans have for centuries been contributing to the enrichment of other people and to their own impoverishment. It is now time to manage the continent to serve our people. And I'm talking about it in a structural sense. The whole business of the partition was what someone like Kwame Nkrumah worked strongly to restore the integrity, the economic integrity, the political integrity,
the cultural integrity, the renaissance that people like Thabo Mbeki wrote about. It is about all Africans now pulling together for a common purpose to achieve the vision that we dream for, an Africa democratic, united, integrated, at peace with itself, and at peace with the world.
It's very interesting that you say that, because you remind me of son of your Ghanaian soil, a kid from Crawford.
That's right.
A man who stood in Accra on March 6, 1957. Mm-hmm. Among the things he said, challenged Ghanaians. He said that the independence of Ghana would be meaningless unless it was linked with the total liberation of Africa.
That's right.
And he did not simply talk the talk, by the way, because in fact he walked the talk.
That's right.
So that Africa could actually walk the walk.
That's right.
By providing the necessary tools to do the needful. How far have we come, really? How come that institution that you work for so far has not been able to deliver on that?
You know, in my view, this is very much work in progress. I'll be the first to admit that we have not achieved our dreams. But I also deny that it has failed. The institution is working very hard. The institution is trying to manage civil servants, over 1,200 from different countries, to work in a coherent role. The institution certainly has challenges. It's trying to manage its finances. Recently, we held a summit for the first time. We had a balanced budget reduced by 12%, accepted by all. It's very much work in progress. But as my hero Nelson Mandela says, after 27 years in jail, he came out. One hurdle is cleared. As soon as that is cleared, you see another hurdle ahead of you. So you must keep on tracking and never give up, because it's very much work in progress. Life is a process. We're coming from a long way.
It's neither an incident. It's neither an incident nor an event. I understand.
It's a process.
But do you sincerely have the necessary tools to do the job?
We may not have all the tools, but the most important tools, that those are the human resources we have.
What about the power? Because let's face it, the last time I checked, you do not have a sovereign status. You talk about how you are like the European Union. But really, when I compare and contrast, there is seems to be a problem.
You know, there's still work to be done. And sovereign status, being sovereign means that you have no master. You are able to do everything for yourself. But we have an African Union, which for a long time was dependent on external financing. That's not exactly sovereignty.
I mean, look at the beautiful building that you call your headquarters with the lab from Beijing.
I have no problem with that. I believe that all nations have their interests. And if they find it worth their while to come and build a whole headquarters for Africa, that's an indication that they see something valuable there.
Yeah. Sorry.
And if I may add, the moment they finished building that, the Germans immediately offered to build a peace and security building.
Yes.
They're beginning to see something there. It's for us Africans to recognize our worth and take care of our business and seek to finance our development and to be able to do it independently. Then we can begin to call ourselves sovereign.
I will come to that, unfortunately. Reverend Okule, time is not best-seller right now. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So please, don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidui Uwat, and of course, welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. It's time to bring in our social media reporter, Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick. Take it away, Heidi.
Thank you very much, Shaka. We've received excellent social media feedback this week. The African Union summit ended in Mauritania with advisory decisions on Libya, Somalia and South Sudan. AU leaders discussed security, trade, corruption and migration. This leads us to our question of the week in which we asked, what do you feel should be the primary objectives of the African Union? Let's start things off here with a social media comment of the week from our Facebook fan, Mohammed Ahmed Mansour from Liberia, who writes, the primary objective of the African Union should be to achieve greater unity and solidarity between African countries and the African people, to defend the sovereignty, territorial integrity, and independence of its member states. Let's go to another comment here from Facebook fan Elwin Mango from Malawi, who writes, the primary objective of the African Union should be bringing peace in unstable countries like the Democratic Republic of Congo. And our last Facebook comment comes from Cheden Male, who writes, the African Union should make sure Africa is able to feed itself. It should also strive to avoid unnecessary civil war caused by political leaders who don't want to leave their positions peacefully. Lastly, the AU should fight corruption and work to improve the security of its member states. Now, a reminder that we do appreciate all of your feedback. If you are a new fan, do drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. And you can comment on our Facebook page. Just enter these keywords, Straight Talk Africa, and be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. You can also join our YouTube channel. Just sign up to VOA TV 2 Africa. You can always follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Straight Talk Africa also streams live every Wednesday on Facebook, or simply go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page that is on our website. You can also watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Let's take a look now at what is ahead for next week's program. On the next Straight Talk Africa, the upset-filled 2018 FIFA World Cup wraps up on Sunday. All five of the teams from Africa, Nigeria, Egypt, Senegal, Morocco and Tunisia were knocked out in the preliminary rounds of the highly competitive event. We'll discuss the World Cup finale and have an in-depth look at the Confederation of African Football Nations that competed in the global extravaganza on the next Straight Talk Africa. And that is all for today's social media segment. Shaka, you and your guests, of course, have a lot of social media comments to discuss, so I'm going to hand it back to you.
Thanks, Heidi. And today, of course, we are talking about the African Union. Our guest, Ambassador Thomas Kwesi Kwate, the deputy chairperson of the African Union based in Addis Ababa, and the Reverend Aniedi Okule, executive director, African Faith and Justice Network, based here in the nation's capital of Washington. I have to say, gentlemen, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
I am equally humbled and privileged to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure. And of course, it is a pleasure, of course, to have you, Ambassador Kwate, for the first time again on Straight Talk Africa.
It's my privilege. Thank you, sir.
You're most welcome, sir. The Reverend, you seem to be itching to jump in.
Yeah, you notice.
And I'm sorry that I wasn't able to oblige because there's no democracy in Studio 47. Because if you are told by the producer to go, you have to go with no question. So I hope that
you like your sense of humor.
I hope that you find some space in your beautiful Nigerian heart. Forgive me for that.
No, I was very taken. I took great interest in what the ambassador is saying because he touched a number of key points that we need to talk more about. Yes. Number one, let me start with the last one about the gifts of the secretariat. I have in my old age learned to be extremely skeptical of gifts of that kind. Because the gifts like that come with strings attached. Most of the time, those strings are invisible strings. Mm. But the giver has planned ahead, looked ahead, and devised ways of getting back that gift 3, 4, 10, or even 100 times over. So I become very skeptical about that. The second I want to touch about in terms of reaching out for, okay, before I go there. Okay, immediately they did that. Germany wanted to do its own.
They did.
Okay, so there's a competition here. For what? It's a question mark. Not out of, what do you call it? It's not out of...
altruism.
Altruism. Thank you, my brother. It's a lot of altruism. But it's a self-serving interest because I've seen so much that I become profoundly skeptical when I see things like that.
Right.
The second aspect is that, us looking for help always. Let me get an analogy here. You have a baby, a newborn baby, who is trying to walk. The baby stands up, falls down. And if you come to them and say, the baby is falling down, let me be carrying the baby. You don't allow the baby to practice getting up and falling down. 18 years later, you have a lame adult, okay? A lame grown-up person. And Africa seems to be going that way. Every time we want to do something, we have to invite all these people to come and help us.
Mm.
And I think it's detrimental to the progress and development of Africa. The ambassador talked about integrity, which is great. In fact, Africa needs that. But the way I see it...
Character,
is that we need to...
Accountability,
transparency. And when you have the kind of governments we have, who are members of the AU itself, then I've become to say, how are they going to, do that where they themselves, a vast number of them, are reluctant to being transparent and accountable in their own country. So in case of promoting the integral whole, it's true, the aftermath of colonization and division, artificial borders remain till today.
Right.
But we can bridge that, not through redrawing the borders, but opening the borders up, having free trade within the regions, having cooperation
and
within
the
regions.
In fact, the AU, I think, was supposed to accomplish that. When you talk about continental market.
Exactly.
Establish a continental market, sincerely, where goods and services and the people
can
move
flow freely.
Freely.
So recently we have, AU passport. What is that, in essence? That's what I'm talking about. Some of the things we establish are very good in books, but how are we doing it? We talk about the African market that is opening to 1.2 billion people.
Right.
Fantastic. But how is that in practice? How do we achieve that?
Why don't we give him the opportunity to substantiate on that and many others? In fact, because he just came back from Mauritania, I suppose. And you had one of these themes, the African Continental Free Trade Area, for example.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about that? And of course, we're talking about combating corruption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, my brother. Let me just begin with the Continental Free Trade Area Agreement. One of the consequences of that Berlin Conference was the erection of the borders, and those borders have been with us since that time. They're basically the borders that we have today. Now, the erection of borders means the erection of different nation states. So that Berlin Conference was the origin of the African nation state as we know it today.
Right.
Now, what is a state? A state is a territory of people
enjoying monopoly of authority, that is power, force. Mm. You have one army, one police, then you have a state. The moment there's contest and the power of the central authority is contested by two or three warring factions, you no longer have a state. That's what we saw in places like Liberia, Sierra Leone, and all that. So the origin of a nation state, if you are seeking to integrate the continents, you are seeking to bring the nation states together.
Correct.
You are seeking to have one central authority. You are seeking to have a continental free trade area where you can move everywhere you want. You are seeking to have a common African passport so that African people can move within their continent without having to be stopped at borders. You have to pay a bribe. You have to do this. You are trying to kind of unshackle our people so that they can realize their dream of Africanness.
When you talk about...
That's what he's trying to do.
When you talk about movement for... Give me if you will. You are based in Addis Ababa. In a sense, this is really the de facto capital of Africa.
The diplomatic capital.
That is correct. And yet, the last time I checked, Africans need a visa, for example, to access their capital.
I am telling you that the last time that I came to, I arrived in Addis Ababa with my daughter, who had just come from the States, they checked us through the VIP. So we went in. Then later they found out my daughter's visa had expired. We were about to get home, about 100 meters away from my home. They called me from the airport that I should bring her back to be detained for having entered without a visa.
Really? Yeah.
And I said, what's going on here? This was the diplomatic capital of the continent. This created some careful people were embarrassed. So the point that you make is real. And this is the result of the division. Each of us guarding their little corner and erecting walls.
Right.
So you cannot take an articulated load of goods from Accra to Lome without being stopped here.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. And they want to take money.
Yeah.
And from there to go to Cotonou, to go to Nigeria. Yeah.
But how do you...
This is the problem.
How do you do that? I mean, let's face it. Yeah. Togo is your neighbor.
We speak the same language.
Just like the Ivory Coast. You actually have, and there is evidence, especially in a book written by your former boss, John Dramani Mahama, The Ghana Coup. Remember the book he wrote? And he talks about some of these families, honestly, where you have a house, when you are in the sitting room, you are in Ghana, and when you go to
the kitchen, in Togo.
You are in Togo.
This is the reality, but this is the artificial nature of it. But granted that we have regional organizations like ECOWAS, which is trying to make movement more free, what remains are the barriers in people's minds. The greatest walls are in the minds of our people and our leaders.
Thank you.
Well, FDR once said that all we fear is fear itself.
So
how do we overcome this?
So there's work to be done.
When I was growing up, to be honest with you.
Where did you grow up? I'm curious.
I grew up in a very interesting town called Kabale, southwestern Uganda.
Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay.
You know,
that's my favorite country. Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Very interesting because your country is one of my favorite countries. No question about it. I was being taught or told that Africa produces what it does not consume and consumes what it does not produce. How come nothing seems to have changed so far, really? Here I am, I'm almost like an old guy.
No, you're a young man.
In the mind.
In the face.
But that's
And when you talk about China, you talk about Germany. Obviously, they are looking for our resources.
Absolutely.
And they are looking for our coltan. Without coltan, no cell phone.
Yep.
No laptop.
Yep.
no video phones, not so many different things.
They are looking for uranium, for nuclear,
looking for diamonds, gold.
Yes.
Looking
for cassiterites.
They have now entered into the business of land.
Yeah, we'll come to that.
Growing food for themselves. What about our people?
Yeah. Sorry, if I may jump in, you touch on something very crucial, because as far as I'm concerned, you know, Africa was colonized and colonized badly, but we could have, if Africans stuck to themselves, we could have changed that narrative in the, you know, within the last 20 years.
Why? We could have.
We could have.
Just like China.
We could have changed that narrative.
Everybody was wearing the same suit in China when I was growing up.
Yep.
And they were basically riding bicycles.
Yep.
There were no highways.
There were nothing.
There were no skyscrapers.
We have all it takes within the continent to change that narrative. So
now we have helped them, in fact, to become a first power.
That's it. We have
through our resources, our oil.
Our oil, our minerals, and
our copper.
Our copper, name it. So, in fact, that's the problem I have with leadership in Africa, is that, you know, I know Berlin Conference was terrible. I know when they came, even the chopping of hands of the Congolese, I know all that went on, terrible atrocities, human rights violations, the killing of about 70% of adult males in Southwest Africa, now Namibia. I mean, name it. It's,
but let's give
but let's come back.
Pate,
yeah, let's come back to what is happening now. That, you know, we have all the opportunities, we have all the intellectual capabilities.
The intellectual balance of power has been shifting in our favor.
Yes, and we are not
tapping
it to change the situation. We have, you know, anyway, sorry.
Please. No, please finish.
No, go ahead.
No, it's just that, you know, I am...
A long time ago, we talked about not having opportunities to go to school.
Uh-huh.
And I know that this is, in fact... one of your, you are very passionate about education. And education is probably the key, really, to Africa. And we are told now, and in fact there is some evidence to boot, that the intellectual balance of power has been shifting in our favor.
In so many ways.
Long time ago we had very few universities. People like Mandela would go to Fort Hare. Very few. Makerere, they would go to Makerere. Would go to Forabe. You know, in Sierra Leone, and probably they go in later, that kind of stuff in Ghana. But now, there are so many universities, there are so many individuals who can read a paragraph and put it apart, analyze it. But what are we doing with that so as to hold the backs of our less fortunate brothers and sisters, our uncles?
I'm glad you talk about education, because in African Union, we hold it that education is really the key to unlock the gate to progress.
Precisely.
But we're not talking about education for an elite few. We are talking about education for every African child.
And the quality education.
And quality education.
Not this universal primary schooling and whatever. We were kids still stand, you know, sit under the tree.
Yeah. I'm talking about the history of Europe and America rather than the history of Africans.
You're talking about education for everybody. We're looking to create a literate and a numerate Africa.
Yes.
An Africa where the cultural level is high. It is only when you are able to generalize serious education that you can begin now to understand science and technology and apply science and technology in the production process.
But you cannot do that unless you have freedom.
Yes.
You have to be in an environment, sincerely, where people may not like this word, but there has to be something akin to democracy, an open society.
Yeah, but education reinforces freedom.
Awareness.
Yeah. Awareness. You can begin to vote out corrupt governments.
Correct.
Yeah.
But how do you vote out corrupt government in a situation sincerely where you don't even have an opportunity, in fact, to have your vote count? Because let's face it, a majority, unfortunately, of your member states, sincerely, leave a lot to be desired when it comes to electoral justice.
Precisely.
And how can you even talk about things like corruption? Mm-hmm. How can you talk about things like service delivery mm-hmm. when, in fact, you are busy mm-hmm. doing what some call creative accounting mm-hmm. or rigging elections? Mm-hmm. Do you have the moral authority, in fact, to do those things?
Mm-hmm. It is more difficult to rig an election in a population who are educated and aware.
Precisely.
It is more difficult to be corrupt in a population who are educated and aware.
Yes.
So education, in my view,
is the key.
Is the key.
And it has been a key. We know that because, let's face it, when you go to Singapore, for example,
you can see it.
The land of Lee Kuan Yew.
You can see it.
Yes.
You can see it.
I think one of
And for us in
China.
For us in Ghana, one of the things that helped us was Kwame Nkrumah's free compulsory educational policy.
That great visionary man.
Mm-hmm. He paid people in the north who had been reserved for labor.
Correct.
By the British, uneducated. He paid parents to send their children to school.
Built universities.
Yep. He got people arrested who would not send their children to school. And through that, he raised the level of the people in the north. And that in that process helped to unite the country. And if we have been able to avoid anything like the civil war that we've seen in other places, it is because of that guy, his far-sighted policies on education and social progress. And so education remains the key.
Look at South Sudan.
Exactly.
What does it have? The country is so large, so fertile, endowed with oil, you name it, it has it. In fact, what does not have are people. They should be in the business of actually importing people to help them develop their country. But what are they doing? They are killing even the few they have.
Yeah, so there is a problem here. You know, when we talk of education, I think if you look at Africa, the level of education, intellectual education at this point, Africa is far above many other countries or regions when they got their act together. By that, I mean the level of education you have in Africa currently, if you say compared to some countries 20 or 50, 60 years ago, is higher comparatively. That's number one. So why is that given that we have not really jump on the table and do what is happening here?
Some people are actually saying that what Africa is lacking right now, or they call it, in fact, a leadership deficit. Do you agree?
It's a leader. In fact, that's where I'm coming with this. No, sorry, that's where I'm coming with this. That there is leadership failure. I make no bones about it. We could stay here for the next day and I can talk about it. And the lack of what is lacking is not so much intellectual education, book education, citizenship education. What does it mean to be a citizen of country?
Civic delivery.
The difference between
being a citizen and being a subject.
Exactly. So many Africans still see their leaders as the emperor style. That they don't see their leaders as people working for them.
It's like they owe allegiance to individual authority.
That's it. That's
a dictator type.
A dictator type. Because you look at the literacy rate in many of the countries.
And yet, they are in fact the sovereign.
Exactly.
Because they are citizens, they have in
the
fact
power rests in them.
Constitutional rights.
The king is king thanks to the
rights. In fact, birthright.
Yeah, the king is king thanks to the people. But
the presidents and the cabinet and the judges are supposed to be their servants.
Yeah, that's it.
But the reality is the other way around.
It's the other way around.
Why?
So that's really a challenge here.
You know, you have countries which require that in order for somebody to go to parliament, for example, they have to have had higher, a very advanced senior secondary education. Or they have, in some cases, university degrees.
Yeah.
But yet, let's face it.
What
in order
produce?
For someone to be a leader, frankly, and can make a difference for his people, yes, you might need a bit of that. But in fact, what you need is character, integrity,
and
communication skills and stuff like that.
And care for the common
accountability.
Good.
Accountability.
Yeah, care for the common good.
But you don't see that kind of stuff in any constitution in the African continent.
But that's where I'm going with this, that until we get that together, you know, we might have all of us with PhDs, we'll still be the same thing. I'm sorry.
Let's give Ambassador Kwate really the last word.
Well,
Let me thank you for the opportunity and also for your emphasis on education. And let me assure you that the African Union and its commission, under the leadership of Chairman of our President Faki Mohamad, is working hard to address the problems within the commission and to address the problems of Africa. We are the first to admit that the problems are of long standing and that we keep struggling like the classical Sisyphus. The more you succeed, the greater the problems that emerge.
And what about Albert Einstein, who talked about how you continue doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results?
It doesn't work.
That you probably would have to be insane.
You cannot succeed that way. But we need to be innovative. We need to recognize the reality, because you can only begin with the reality.
Imaginative,
creative.
But we need the freedom to be able to do that.
And transparent. And also, we must be ready to listen to our people all the time.
And consult them.
And consult them.
Involve them.
Regularly. Because the voice of the people is the voice of God. If you do that, you can't go wrong.
I think you see, we really have a problem, because we have some very good individuals who may mean very well, but at the end of the day, frankly, they don't deliver much, because they just wake up and decide this is what you need, without consulting their people.
You must consult the people.
And that is the colonial mentality there, that, you know, I know what is best for you. And we are continuing it 50 years later. We still have leaders after independence perpetuating that same mentality. How do we expect things to change when we don't consult, when we think we know it all? We don't. It's not possible. And in fact, that is what is feeding into this corruption. You know, corruption, I'm glad to hear that the AU took up corruption as a theme, because in fact, if I may, the Africa Faith and Justice Network is just 2 years ago, you know, we know that we want to take up, you know, promote just governance and tackle corruption. We are planning, as we speak, a program for Liberia, Uganda, DRC, Nigeria, and all of that, Cameroon. So until we get that, until we get our act together, you know, I want to say this, Madam Ambassador. I really think, I personally strongly believe that Africa's problem today, 80% of them, of that problem, lies in the continent.
Yeah, it is among us.
It's among us. We can change that dynamics very easily. We have the resources, we have the human resources, we have fertile land, we have minerals. Just even
where we help to build that, the other countries to be very powerful.
Yes, we have.
Why can't we build our own countries?
Why can't we build ourselves? We have taken
it is now time to build Africa by Africans.
Do you think that we should probably have more faith in terms of the changing demographics and the social media?
The changing demographics are a sincere, very important advantage, but they have to be educated and trained.
Well, next time, please come here and we have one-on-one. I think you have a lot to share with our
audience. Absolutely.
Well,
thank you for the opportunity.
On that note, our guests are Ambassador Thomas Kwesi Kwate and the Reverend Aniedi Okule. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, for many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.